watch the struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
Illegal. Illegal. Time is 8:57 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and Truth podcast, harbored by collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, Drew Croson, at SenecaCrow2 on Twitter, at SenecaCrow on Venmo. To one side of me is the rumor monger via the magic of Skype, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for shirt on, watching the Braves.
Clinching the division.
I like the fact that you might have just jinxed them. There's a chance.
I mean, hey, look, if they give up 10 runs with one out left in the ninth,
man,
I won't watch baseball ever again.
That's about pretty, that? It's pretty Atlanta.
Look, they're not the Falcons, okay?
To the other side of me, giving you full Fort Payne ASMR, a guy who knows the ball has to, the ball can be touched by the receiving team before it travels 10 yards, the AU chief.
All right, mate.
You know, actually, Ryan, apparently the Falcons coach, who is still gainfully employed by the team, said that the players all know the rules and that they're actually told to watch the ball, and just, if they think it's not going to make it 10 yards, to, you know, don't worry about it.
That one was clearly going to make it 10 yards. It's not like it just kind of inched up to it. It had a head of steam coming.
As a Cowboys fan, we're usually on the other end of those. Players doing dumb stuff, and so it was happy to be on the winning end.
I told you when it was a 20-point game that I said, "Oh, Falcons are going to blow this, aren't they?"
Yeah.
And you said, "Oh, they're going 0-16."
Yeah. Shout out to Dak Prescott.
Shout out to Dak. Won me my second in a row. I'm on a hot streak in fantasy football. So
he's my favorite Mississippi State Bulldog.
The thing that Crow was referring to about it being okay to touch the ball while you're not offside if the other team touched it first is that did the Braves just give up some runs behind you there?
They walked somebody with two outs in the ninth.
It begins.
there was a point where Everton striker Dominic Calvert-Lewin was flagged offside. And but it turns out that he was flagged offside because they thought it had come off of Richarlison, Brazilian number nine, his head, but actually had come off the other team's head. So that means that Dominic Calvert-Lewin was not offside, and the crappiest of crap goals that he scored from what would have been an offside position was actually a clean goal on his way to a hat trick.
Yeah, it was a big day for him, for DCL.
Big day.
And again, that at one point was tied 2-2, and I was howling when that was the
case.
Yeah,
well, I was actually never worried about the game. It was
they had like nine guys at that point.
Yeah, they were down to – it was 1-0 at one point, and then Everton got on the ball and was up 2-1, and then immediately after halftime – West Brom went up, or tied it up at 2-2, but never scored again.
West Brom United, home of some of the ugliest green and yellow kits. It's weird because those are cool colors, and yet soccer teams with those colors never do it right.
I said this exact thing to James Jones, is someone needs to tell Norwich and West Brom that those colors, you can actually make a nice-looking uniform with those colors, but neither one of them can seem to do it. But of course, West Brom, that's a new, like, they usually don't have those colors,
right?
And at least since I've been watching,
if West Ham can make those colors look good, surely West Brom can make green and yellow look good.
And they can't. West Brom's normal colors are green and blue. I don't really know why they brought the yellow in. Maybe it's they used to use yellow or something, but
yeah,
it's pretty ugly.
In other Eurosport, you guys, it was the Tour de France ended on Sunday, and Saturday was maybe one of the best bike races I've ever seen in my entire life. So, as most people might not know, Sunday is a mostly traditional stage or ceremonial stage. No one passes. So if you win the yellow jersey by Saturday, then you basically have won the race. You have. Saturday's just a Sunday's just a victory lap. So
I'm sure the Falcons could screw that up.
I mean, theoretically, you could crash or break your leg and you're out of the race. But you have all you really have to do is finish on Sunday if you're in first and you win, because the real racing's done Saturday. So going in for over 2 of the 3 weeks worth of days of the tour, a guy named Primoz Roglic, Slovenian former professional ski jumper who turned into a cyclist somehow, had been in the lead and had been dominant, and his team had been dominant. Like, no one could come close to him. His team had been fending off every attack. He had teammates winning stages on their own just because he didn't want to win every stage, basically. It was one of the more impressive team effort bike races I've ever seen. But there was this other guy, also Slovenian, who is 21 years old, named Tadej Pogačar. And Tadej was never all the way in striking distance because he had a really bad day on like the third day of the tour. So he was kind of in the back, and so no one cared about him. But he had slowly worked his way back up to within a minute. So going into Saturday, he was 56 seconds down, had won a stage already, but it was 56 seconds down. But it was an individual time trial. Now, Ryan, do you know what an individual time trial is in cycling?
You're just going by yourself, man?
Absolutely. So an individual time trial is the race of truth, it's called. A race against the
clock. I think you think that I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure. You're tracking with me. An individual time trial, guys, is the race of truth. It is the easiest thing to understand on Earth. Everybody gets to ride the exact same course, but you get to do it one at a time. Whoever has the fastest time wins. So you can make up time on it because people aren't, like, passing you. However, you can't use your teammates at all. You got to go. It's all you. If it's windy, it's you in the wind. If it's a climb, it's you on the climb. And Tadej Pogačar was 56 seconds down going into this time trial, makes up the 56 seconds within a few miles. It was a short time trial, too. It was only an hour long. And he ends up a minute and a half ahead of the guy who was in yellow, Primoz Roglic, by the end of the time trial. So then it's Roglic's turn. He's going on the course. The whole time he's on the course, he's hearing in his radio what the guy in front of him, who is Tadej, is doing. And his teammates have got to be going, dude, you're 30 seconds down all of a sudden. You're 40 seconds down. You're 50 seconds down. And so you see this guy just like realizing while riding his bike that he's lost the Tour de France. In that instance, it was heartbreaking because you see this guy, by the time he crossed the finish line, he's in shambles because he lost a race that he had led for 2 weeks, and his teammates can't help him. His teammates are just watching the other guy go with just their mouths open, like, holy cow, who is this monster? But then turns out Tadej Pogačar didn't even have a radio on. So his team couldn't even talk to him. Because they didn't want any distractions. He just rode his tail off and ended up winning the tour. 21 years old, youngest winner ever, I believe.
Wow, that's crazy.
Most guys who win these things are like 27, 28, 29. You don't hit your stride until you're like 30. And this dude's won it. 2 years in a row now we've had 21-year-olds win the tour. But yeah, this dude, 21-year-old, 22nd birthday was Monday. So the day after he won the tour, it was his 22nd birthday. So that's your cycling recap for the weekend. We have world championships this weekend.
Are you a bigger fan of his or Lucas at this point?
The Ringer did an incredible piece on Tadej Pogačar is actually the best 21-year-old Slovenian athlete in the world. They did it actually before the last day of the tour. So they were before the last time draw. So they were like prescient. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, wait, crap, this guy just won the whole thing. And nobody, I cannot stress you enough, nobody saw this coming. it was a foregone conclusion that Primož Roglič, 56 seconds up, had won the Tour, was going to head into Paris as champ. Nobody saw this dude making up a minute on a time trial and then putting a minute on. That's an incredible, it was an incredible ride. So, Ryan, we got show notes, it looks like.
Yeah, something like that.
So the big news is it's Kentucky week. That's what I've been told. Kentucky's having a heck of a week, actually. Anthony Davis with that game winner for the Lakers against the Nuggets. Yeah, Bam's looking awesome for the Heat.
Just saved the game, didn't he?
Yeah.
The block. Game 7?
Yeah, and you have Boogie Cousins, who's consistently taking shots on Instagram. He's looking better, man. I've been watching them workouts on Instagram. Mobile, Alabama's own Boogie Cousins is gonna be back. You know, he's a very much a typical Mobile, Alabama Kentucky fan.
Shout out to Nerd, is very proud of the time you played defense against him.
I've seen him wearing Alabama football stuff, and he went to Kentucky. So that's all you really need to know.
I mean, in his defense, why would you go play basketball at Alabama?
Especially at that point when he went to Kentucky. Right. That was, I want to say, Avery's first year? No, it may have been before that.
No, way before that.
Yeah. He's been in a league.
He's been in a league for a while.
Years, 9 years.
Because he was part of, that's right, he was part of Cal's like first massive signing class. Him and John Wall and Eric.
He was on the Bledsoe.
2009, 2010. Yeah. 10 years.
Who was at Alabama in 2009?
That would have been Mark Gottfried.
Who was at Auburn? Was that Barbie?
That was Barbie's first year.
How come we didn't get Boogie? World Wide West didn't get us Boogie? Come on now.
Was Gottfried still there in 2009, or had they hired Grant already? I think Gottfried was still there.
Anthony Grant, 2009, 2010.
Okay.
Shout out to Dayton.
Yeah, that was Grant's first season.
Okay.
He didn't get Boogie either. See, nowadays, I feel like if a DeMarcus Cousins type coming from Mobile,
number one, he'd be in the G League.
Yeah, he probably goes to G League. But if he didn't go to the G League, he would come to Auburn or Alabama.
Maybe.
I think Bruce wouldn't let him out. Lou wouldn't let him out of state. Actually,
it would be a lot of fun to see play with Bruce Pearl.
There'd be a better chance that Boogie comes to Auburn if he was from Atlanta than it would be if he's from Mobile.
That's true.
I mean, we've had...
He probably goes to LSU, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We've had a few guys leave the state since Bruce has been here, though. E.J. Montgomery, right?
Yeah. Who's the kid from Auburn High?
UNC? That plays in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
He didn't do much against us in the tournament. So.
Well, we're talking basketball, so you know that means we're playing Kentucky in football this weekend.
That's right.
Ryan, what's the big news out of Auburn's camp?
Well, something in the depth chart came out today.
And we hit on it
last week, you know, kind of covered most of
the
depth chart.
We were the only podcast that had the guts to cover the depth chart before it was even released. No other podcast has that kind of confidence. But now we have nothing to cover because the depth chart's already been released.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about?
Well, we were right. Sean Shivers is the starter.
I mean, we didn't really see it coming, but Bo Nix is going to be playing quarterback for us this year.
The most surprising thing is
the veteran presence of Cord was going to win out. But
yeah. The most surprising thing is there's only one oar across the offensive line.
Yeah. So Gus found his top 10, but really more like a top 6.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about that.
So if you haven't seen it, the offensive line is Bredarius Hamm at right tackle, Brandon Council at right guard, Nick Broms at center, Tayshaun Manning at left guard, and then the oar is at left tackle, Alec Jackson and Austin Troxell. Just another name in the pipeline of defensive line to offensive line at Auburn, Dallas Jackson.
Yeah.
Is that, would that be the third or the fourth since Gus has been here, like starting
it's offensive lineman? It's the best recruiting hotbed for offensive line talent we've got.
Running
our, our own defensive line.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason is, though, is you just go and you find the biggest, most athletic guys you can find, and then you're like, oh, yeah, let's stick these guys at tackle and not defensive tackle.
And Tayshaun Manning was recruited as a defensive lineman, too, if I remember correctly.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Because he was one of those guys that he took a few years to get back playing because wasn't it him and Bradarius Ham both had cancer as, like, after we signed him?
Sounds okay. Right.
Like, I know I'm not supposed to be speculating of,
I wonder if this is one of another Ryan, one of the rumor mongers. No, that does sound right.
Okay. Not crazy.
I know that we've had, you know, Sean Coleman famously had leukemia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then right. I think we've had two more, and I think
it was both of these guys.
Yeah. So
the other thing that stands out to me on the, at least on the offensive side, is that there is only one senior who's starting, and that's Eli Stove.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one other senior on the two deep. That's Grant Loy, quarterback.
To be fair, Eli Stove's senior status is like counts as like three senior statuses since he's like a seventh year senior.
Right. And he could come back next year.
Oh, that's right. Man, alive.
Yeah. He's probably not got a career in football after Auburn just because of all the knee surgeries he's had.
Yeah, so why not?
Say, yeah, get the Masters, stick it out another year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, senior. You get close to his doctorate.
The thing that jumps out to me is that there are some hosses on this offensive line. Like, this is not, you know, early in the Gus versus Bielema days, you know, everybody's like, well, Brett Bielema gets these big boys across the line or whatever. But I think pretty much anybody just size wise would be proud to have the guys we've got on our line. We got 325, 330, 324, 315, 312, and 299. Those are some big boys. And yeah. Most of them, they're all over 6'3. Most of them are over 6'4. 6'5", so it's pretty big.
It's huge, and I think that's kind of maybe what we want to do, like in terms of like, because we're going to try to run the ball more, that's just kind of Gus's thing. That's probably better for us to have a little bit more heft.
Sure. Chief and I talked about this before where, you know, the only or is at left tackle, and we're kind of wondering, well, wouldn't you think you would have your left tackle figured out first? And it's like, if Bradarius Ham has already won a job, why isn't he the left tackle? But it might be that he excels at run blocking, and maybe we are heavier to the right side when we run. Well,
and yeah, I think also you want to have your best pass blocker on the left. I mean, just to protect that blind side. So. Right. Unless Brandon Cox is your quarterback.
Is it strange to have a tight end heavier than your center?
I think that's not necessarily the ideal. I doubt that the NFL looks at that. But hey, it's awesome to see a tight end listed on the depth chart.
It's I don't see any tight ends because I don't see any tight ends on here. There's tight ends on
this.
I think
this is the year that we have to accept the reality that they're out there. They're among us.
Chiefs tight end blind.
I just see a bunch of running backs on here, and then I see
there's one first baseman.
Sure.
I just see running backs, and then there's like a just white space, and it goes to wide receiver.
Really white space.
Well,
in the case of some of the guys. I think that we've talked a little bit about the differences between what Morris is going to try to do on offense versus what Gus did. But I think Ferguson, another shout out to Justin Ferguson, whose podcast is better than this.
Yes.
What he talked about was, it's basically like these are two cooks using the exact same ingredients to make different things. So I'm going to take it one step further than he did. Imagine Gus and Chad Morris are both on Chopped, and they've been asked to make a main course, but they have to use the same ingredients out of the Chopped box. Ryan, I don't know if you've ever watched the television show Chopped. It is a delight on the Food Network. Mm. Basically, the way it works is contestants are given a box of ingredients. They are random and nonsensical, and yet they're asked to make either a main course, a dessert, or an app based on the contents of the box. So imagine, if you will, Gus Malzahn is sitting there next to Chad Morris. They're at the same kitchen, and they're each given a box. They open it. It's the same ingredients. They are going to make different things, but they're using the same stuff. So Chad probably has, it's the same playbook almost, but he's going to do different things and highlight different parts of the offense than Gus is going to highlight. And that goes back to the fact that they, you know, shared crib notes on how to formulate a high school offense.
Well, can we talk about the one quote that came out, I think, from John Samuelshanker this week about how in Chad Morris's offense, tight ends / first baseman actually get route trees and not just plays that they run. As Crow takes a big old sip.
You think about that quote, that I think that quote was not intended by John Samuelshanker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, but to be negative, but I think it was taken by a bunch of Bunkerites and people who really don't like Gus. Mm-hmm. In the worst possible connotation.
I didn't check out the reaction to it, but when I read it, I was like, oh, that's bait right there.
Oh yeah.
Bunker just bait. Chumming the water, just throwing it right to him.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that we could have added to that was, you know, running plays out of the sugar huddle with route trees.
Man.
The thing about it is, you've got two schools of thought. So, like, when Cam was going into the league, people were like, he made some comment, a very similar one, where like Gus just taught them the plays. Mm-hmm. They didn't learn the concepts. Right. And that was a huge issue with some people. Like, oh, Cam, the plays are all called, like, 1 or 3 or 7 because there's not, like, the super long name that an NFL play has so that everybody knows what everybody else is doing. And Cam turned out fine. So
it's doing pretty good.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just the way some people teach things, because there's a lot of people who learn. Like, the tight end in Gus's office didn't need to know the full route tree. They only needed to know the 6 or 7 routes that they were going to have to run on 6 or 7 plays. Maybe even less than that.
Probably wasn't that.
We were never going to throw them the ball.
Yeah.
So why would they have? Why would they need to know anything?
Right. The only play they needed to know was when the quarterback rolls out right, is to just kind of float out into the flat to the left, be open for the touchdown.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Want to go to defense?
So I didn't take it as a super.
It was just funny that he seemed to hit on multiple talking points over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It really felt like he'd been reading the bunker, and he just said that just to rile people up. Like, that's what it felt like.
So on defense, there was a couple surprises there, whereas, you know, the offense was pretty straightforward. The other defensive tackle spot next to Tyron Truesdale, you know, we thought it might be Daquan Newkirk or one of the JUCOs that they signed, but it ended up being Colby Wooden, a redshirt freshman, who we all thought was a defensive end. I mean, he was listed at the end of last year at, you know, 6'4", 260, something like that. Mm-hmm. Reports are that he's kind of bulked up a little bit to move inside, but it seems like they're putting a lot of responsibility on the freshman, especially with Kentucky coming up. It's just going to run right at him.
Yeah. And there's not an or next to his name. There's only one or in the starters. He's just a straight up starter, which is pretty cool. But funny enough, though, the or we have is between Owen Popo and Zakobi McLean, which is
the Ricochet Rabbit, I believe is what that was first to be called.
I guess it's not that surprising. I think Popo's the Papo, however you want to say it.
I think it's Papo.
I think he's the real starter, but they're gonna play pretty much just as much as one another.
Yeah, I mean, I think the three of them will probably rotate
right
into pretty equal snaps, depending on the looks.
It's Papo.
I believe so.
I mean, there's terrible tackle puns that can be made with that. I'm gonna let the listener come up with that and then send me a text message.
What's your number there, Chris?
Those who know it, know it. $10 at Cinecrow and Venmo, and I'll give you my personal cell phone number.
It's 1-800-CALL-CROW. Right?
Yeah, that's what it is. If he was Hawaiian, it'd be Papoe. Owen Papoe.
Yeah, there would be a apostrophe in there.
At least one.
Yeah.
Then he'd have to overcome the language barrier, and I don't know, might be a little more difficult.
That's true.
Did it seem weird to you guys that we actually have 11 starters on offense and defense? I feel like the starters over the last couple of years have grown into like 14 starters on each side of the ball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it now and there's four defensive linemen, two linebackers, and five guys in the secondary.
Which lets you know that maybe it wasn't Gus doing the orves. That may have been a position coach thing.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. The special teams, however, has several oars in here for you.
Got more oars than a canoe.
The punter battle with Aiden Marshall and Oscar Chapman.
Yeah, which
Chapman's the Aussie. Marshall punted for us 2 years ago.
If Marshall That's right. gets beaten
I think just left the team, just stayed as an Auburn student last year.
If he gets beaten out by another Australian punter, he's just going to declare war on Australia.
We or got a holder there. Battle going on. What's that?
Or he'll just move there and go, this is it. I have to go here now to learn to be a good punter.
It's an exchange program.
Yeah. What if he goes and becomes
He's going to go be a footy star.
Exactly. He's going to go become an Australian football player. He'll be the best of all time.
There's a battle at Holder, too, between what you would expect with Grant Loy, the backup, and Ben Patton. No idea who that is.
I wish we would have had...
General Ben Patton.
Kalen Newton as the holder. That would have been great, right?
Wonder if he has any experience doing that.
Your backup quarterback used to always be your holder, at least when you played NCAA, right?
Sure.
Or your starting quarterback.
It's like Gus has always used like a defensive back or skill position guy.
Right. I'm thinking before Gus.
Randomly, there's teams that have like their punter is their holder, and that's only so they can like
practice together.
Yeah, they don't have to get rid of any skill players during practice. Yeah.
I feel like that's more common in the NFL where. Yeah. You've only got 53 guys in the roster, so you got to make them do everything.
Right.
And then it looks like Christian Tutt's going to return punts again this year. He was excellent at it last year. I want to say he got all SEC at punt returner last year. Maybe second team or something like that.
I think it's interesting that there are no, like, it's just the two guys on kick returns. There's no, like, backups for those guys.
And I'm sure we'll see other guys cycle through.
Like, surely.
Maybe Mark Anthony Richards or Anthony Schwartz.
Yeah, but, when we're blowing teams out, like Alabama, LSU.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
I don't like that Charles Barkley put Kentucky on wax. Put it on wax that Kentucky is on notice. I mean, like, that was not... I don't like bulletin board material from celebrities on national television because I'm not as confident in this game as apparently Las Vegas is.
What is it, like a touchdown or no?
No, it opened at 7. It's now 10.5, one place I saw. 10.5 is free money, is what I think. Because I don't like that. I wouldn't touch 10.5.
This could be a game Auburn leads for most of the game. And then it's a 4-point game.
How can you even bet on these games? You've seen how awful all these other teams have been. And the commentary that from people in the Auburn fan base is to make fun of all these other teams looking bad. I'm like, we have no idea how we're going to look.
Yeah.
This has been a weird year. Yeah, we didn't have a spring.
We missed weeks of practice because of quarantine.
It's not just Auburn. We're going to be able to make fun of ourselves.
It's SEC fans in general are acting like the SEC teams. Oh, there's no way that any of them will look this bad. And it's like, really? Like, nobody had a spring.
I've watched enough Texas A&M football. They're going to be bad.
The only teams that have figured it out is Baylor. Baylor's got it figured out. Just cancel. Baylor just cancel every week because Baylor's now on their fourth try to start the season. Their first try was normal. That got canceled. Their second try was against, I want to say, Louisiana Tech. Canceled because of COVID cases on Tech. The third try was supposed to be like this weekend. Actually, maybe like tonight or some random weekday game against Houston.
Well, they scheduled that Houston game like 5 days ago, too.
Yeah, and they got canceled yesterday. They canceled it because of Baylor has contact tracing. They had one guy test positive, but because of that, 8 people who were like a whole position group can't play. So they've canceled the game. And so now, next week, will be their first game of the season against Kansas, allegedly. If Baylor may have figured it out, let's just cancel every game. And we'll just keep practicing for the one game. Play that one game. Oh, we won.
Well, if they're going to play one game, this is the one. Undefeated play, season. Right?
You can hang a banner.
Big 12 champs.
Meanwhile, Auburn's going to try to play every game. You watch. We're going to play them with a bunch of freshmen or university, random university students out there playing defensive back at some point.
This is how we get Kalen Newton playing quarterback.
That may be it. Or Bo Nix playing free safety, too.
It's going to be NFL street style. You get 7 guys. They play both ways. And
I already mentioned that, I think, in the Slack a couple weeks ago. That was before we had actually announced that we were going to have a season. I was like, they should just play 7-on-7. Call this season a wash. And then everybody can play 7-on-7 because then you've got a ton of kids to choose from. As long as they get 7 healthy ones you can play.
Be looking like a 1A high school football game.
Here in Texas, they play 6.
20 kids in the whole team.
In Texas, the 1A, some of the smaller than 1A schools play 6-man football. It is awesome.
Yeah, they missed an opportunity to just play some games with some wacky rules and stuff too.
6-man football is like you got 3 linemen, and everybody's eligible. I'm pretty sure.
And, so it's like PE football.
Yeah.
It's almost like intramural flag.
3 yeah. linemen. There's a bunch of other wacky rules. The field is shorter. It's wild. It's worth a gander on the old YouTubes, Texas 6-man football. Because heaven forbid these schools say we can't have a football team. We only got 10 kids in our graduating class. No, they're gonna do it. They'll play 6-on-6.
Are there any schools that are small that like get together for athletics?
I don't know if that still happens out here. There might be. Maybe out in West Texas.
Yeah.
There are more people in my neighborhood than in some counties in West Texas.
That's wild. So. There's probably more people in your neighborhood than there are in some counties in Alabama too.
Yeah. There are more counties in Georgia than in Texas, I believe, which is even weirder. Yeah, that's
pretty big counties, don't they?
Yeah, Brewster County out in West Texas is larger than, I think, New England.
Jesus.
Something like that. Could be wrong.
That's wild.
We've been known to be wrong here in Texas. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will discuss some more things to talk about.
What's the time?
At 37 minutes, we are back. Not 37 minutes, sorry, 35 minutes. 34 minutes and 30 seconds, exactly.
How about them Braves? I forgot to say that at the beginning of the show.
They clinched it without giving up any runs.
Hey, man, right. They did it. They're the ones.
Now we just have to win a playoff series for the first time in my memory.
Oh, my God, Ryan, are you serious?
Yeah, pretty sure. Wasn't it 2003?
Oh,
I was 8.
Jeez, Ryan. I'm so sorry.
I keep forgetting.
The first Braves playoff game I remember watching all the way through was the Astros game. Where they didn't win.
I'm so sorry, Ryan. So very sorry.
Yeah. It is what it is.
I can remember when Deion Sanders played for the Braves.
Me too.
And I wasn't even a Braves fan.
I was. Those are fun times. It's fun to be a Braves fan back then, Ryan. Real fun.
You know what? I'm sure it was.
So, Ryan, tell me a little bit about the Kentucky Wildcat football team. Wow. That's what they do.
Who are you, my dad?
So if you watch Wildcat. Kentucky, are you just like the stadium noise that they do whenever, like after kickoff?
Yeah, no, yeah I'm thinking of Wildcat from the movie The Royal Tenenbaums, and Owen Wilson wrote a book called Wildcat.
Right.
And he just keeps saying, Wildcat, wow, Wildcat. And then he just leaves the interview. Yeah, the best line from that movie is about General Custer, because he wrote a book called Old Custer. It's about General Custer growing old, which obviously didn't happen. And he explains the book by saying, everybody knows that Custer died at the Battle of the Bighorn. What this book presupposes, though, is maybe he didn't.
That is one of the best lines. Yes.
It's a great movie. All right, Ryan, who is Terry Wilson, and why should we be terrified of him returning at quarterback?
Are we terrified of Terry?
Absolutely.
So Terry Wilson is the quarterback who didn't really play last year. He got hurt at the beginning of the season, which led way to the Lindbone experience, which was a lot of fun. But he's made his way to the NFL now.
I'm super glad we didn't play. He's not on the team this year.
Yeah.
I'm super glad they aren't doing that this season, because that would terrify me.
So he was the quarterback in 2018 on that team that won 10 games and beat Florida, and I think beat Penn State, if my memory serves.
I completely forgot that Kentucky was 10 wins.
Yeah, Kentucky was a borderline top 10 for a little bit 2 years ago.
Jeepers, creepers, we're going to lose this game.
They had the good Josh Allen and Benny Snell.
The good Josh Allen.
So he didn't really have to do a ton, because they had Benny Snell, and he was just focal point of the offense. I mean, he played in every game and didn't even get to 2,000 yards throwing or 600 yards rushing. He had 11 touchdowns, 8 picks, and he wasn't really throwing the ball downfield, because he had almost a 70% completion percentage, and that only got him 1,900 yards. I think it's pretty safe to say that we don't have to worry a ton about the passing game in this one. They're going to try and run it right up the gut and do it early and often. They're getting all three of their running backs back. They all played pretty equally last year. I think it's like 2,000 yards, 18 touchdowns between the three of them. And they've got a guy for everything. I mean, they've got senior A.J. Rose, who's the starter. He's kind of the all-around back. They've got all-SEC name Kavazie Smoke, who's their speed back.
Yeah.
And then Christopher Rodriguez Jr. is their little 5'10", 220 bowling ball.
We have to remember that they do all this. They have this sort of – that's this what I consider statistical success there, those running backs. But they do this in the SEC East, which is not that impressive.
Well, it's not like it's the Big Ten.
Eh.
Or like they're not playing against the All-American Conference or something like that. That's a conference, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It is. The AAC.
Yeah.
Is it now? I don't know. but
I think that that's a conference. I think they're playing their games even.
Okay. But yeah.
I couldn't be sure.
I am trying to convince myself that we're not going to lose to this team. So,
Ryan, are you there?
I think we lost him.
We lost him. Chief, the good news is the last time I was this nervous about us losing a game was last year against Mississippi State.
Hmm.
I was convinced we were losing that game. Like, convinced. And
well,
we won by a lot.
I just think this is tricky, mainly because of what I was saying earlier. Like, we have no idea what anybody's going to look like. Like, we could be making mistakes. We could be sloppy all over the field. It's our first game, yeah. And there's no – I mean, in the SEC, it's it may be if you have to start with an SEC game, it may be the biggest parachute you could hope for. I guess you could get Vandy or any one of the other Arkansas at this point, but it could be way worse than Kentucky, but it's still, clearly these are guys that had success a couple of years ago. And we really don't know what to expect either team to look like, from a execution standpoint, I would think. So,
yeah.
Can y'all hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back, Rick.
I think you're absolutely right. The fact that we literally had a couple of weeks where we couldn't have a full practice.
Yeah. Like, and I know it's not just us, so it's not even that. Like, it's just my whole thing is we don't know how any of these teams are going to look like. That's why I've held back on making fun of how bad some of these other teams have looked, because you just don't know.
Right.
And this game is, in my preseason prediction, this is the one out of the three big ones that I think we could lose that I'm the most concerned about just because of that.
Yeah. All right.
So, you guys have any idea who the leading receiver was on this team last year?
Speedy Noyle. I don't know. I have no idea.
That's the wrong school.
Yeah.
He's also the leading passer and leading rusher, Lynn Bowden Jr.
That's unbelievable.
Led the team with 30 catches for 350 yards.
That is like some high school stat.
That is
that's some triple option stuff.
That's some high school BS. That's the say.
Kentucky has a history of getting just guys that could just do anything, though. Like Randall Cobb was one of those guys. Yeah.
You got Hefty Lefty.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. He could do anything.
He can throw and run.
Ample block.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to see Randall Cobb get out there and block a 300-pound lineman. I don't know. I am nervous about it just because of what I said. I think my gut tells me Auburn should win this game. We've seemed pretty focused. We return a quarterback that did well in some areas and not so well, struggled in some others. I think this the passing game that we're going to have this year should help him a lot.
I think having a healthy Anthony Schwartz is going to go a long ways.
Just having healthy receivers, period, it will help a lot. If you remember, we did beat a fairly decent Oregon team to open the season last year. Somehow. there are reasons to think that we should definitely win this game.
Yeah, the way Auburn loses this game, you have to believe that either the offense literally can't get off the mat. We're talking less than 10 points.
Yeah.
Or you don't trust the new defensive line. My counterpoint to that would be, you've still got the best linebacker corps in the country behind them, even if the defensive line struggles.
It's true.
This is a very good ground game that we're going to be going against. It's a you know, three seniors on the offensive line. They're pretty much turning everybody there.
Right.
And we do have some, you know, we're losing two of our best defensive linemen in program history. I mean, one of the top three, and, you know, Marlon Davidson's probably top 20.
And the argument's been made that Derrick Brown was the third best player in program history.
Not on our show.
But, not on our show. You know,
that was a take.
I don't know if I would go there, but he's a good player.
I think he's one of the two best defensive linemen in program history. Fair?
He's probably one of the two best defensive players, minimum.
Well, I guess so. Carlos Rogers and Tracy Rocker are the other options.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So, yeah, replacing those guys is going to be difficult. I'm a big fan of Tyron Truesdale. I think he's going to have a big year. Because he was a a three-star, maybe two-star guy as a recruit. And, you know, struggled getting into game shape as a freshman a couple years ago. And now he's the anchor of this defensive line. And even as a big guy, he's 330, I think, 320. And was still in the backfield all the time last year. I'm a big believer in his, and he'll get his chance to shine in this game.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see them definitely be able to move the ball up and down the field on us. But I think
I don't think they're going to have any explosive plays, though, is the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's usually what kills Auburn.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
On both sides. Usually what's killed Auburn in the past is a lack of explosive plays on offense and giving up too many explosive plays on defense.
Yeah. But even if they can move it up and down the field on us, once we get it inside the 35 or so, we usually lock it up. And I don't see any reason for that not to continue. Once they have less field to work with, our linebackers can sort of shut things down, even if they're moving the ball.
All right. Look into your magic, your crystal ball right now. What is the number one complaint this Saturday on Twitter? Are we complaining about something with the offense, about, oh, Bo Nix, he's just not it? Is it the play calling with Chad Morris? What's going on? There's going to be a complaint.
It's going to be a third down play.
Looks like the Mississippi State game last year, there's going to be complaints.
It's going to be a third down play. Auburn doesn't get it, and we go three and out.
Why?
And people are going to be like, this is the same thing.
Because we pass on third and two.
This is Gus's offense.
I think it'll be we run it three times straight inside our own 10 more than once in the game, just straight at the middle three times in a row. Same old, same old. We stopped doing that as much last year. I don't know if anybody noticed that, mm-hmm. but
because we couldn't get a push up the middle, and
yeah, right.
Best running back wasn't really a power back.
I think we're gonna return to that, and it's gonna make some people pretty angry.
I really think something. I truly believe something broke on the offense in the LSU game in 2018, on that 4th and 1, that just. They got stuffed.
Yeah.
And ever since then, just the offensive line didn't work, whatever the whole offense, I don't know. Because even before that, in that LSU game and the Washington game, I mean, the offense was good. And since then, not so much, but. Pretty much resetting now with the offensive line and whole new guys at running back, new offensive coordinator.
I mean,
I'm having a hard time holding my optimism in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic too. I feel good about it.
I feel good about it on the outside.
Yeah.
Like I would tell people Auburn's going to win. But inside, I have a deep fear of this game.
I mean, I think the important thing to remember is it's not the end of the world if we lose this game.
That's true. 10-game season, all conference games. No one knows what anyone's going to look like. And it could be a 2-loss, 3-loss SEC champion.
Hey, and the problem is it is the end of the world once you go 0-2 if you lose to Kentucky and Georgia.
Right. That's true. I was listening to the Steam Room with Chuck and Ernie this week, Sir Charles and Ernie Johnson, and Bruce and Gus were on there, and Gus, it was really cool listening to Gus talk. Like, he is sort of a different person than you're used to seeing on anything right. else, basically. And he said their message to the players was that they feel like Auburn is at an advantage with this 10-game schedule, because now everyone else in the conference has to play as tough a schedule as Auburn is used to playing.
That's true.
I don't think it's 100% true. I don't think Alabama's schedule got any tougher. And I don't think there's a few teams that I don't think
it takes out the fluff games.
Yeah, it takes out the fluff games, but I just, you know, everybody didn't add Georgia and Alabama to their schedule.
Who did Alabama add?
Missouri, right? And Kentucky? Vandy?
No.
Did they go Missouri? No, I want to say.
I'm pretty sure it was Missouri.
They did get Missouri. I think they played Missouri the last week of the season. They have Missouri, Tennessee, Georgia, and South Carolina, maybe?
Yeah.
That'd be right.
Maybe.
So I know they're not playing Florida. Florida came out of this looking really good.
Yeah.
At least with the schedule. I mean, so I've been passing around a season prediction thing to some of the other SB Nation sites, and more than one person has had Florida coming out of this is 10-0. I mean, if they were to upset Georgia, you know, if you even call it an upset,
they don't have
Auburn,
Georgia.
They don't have Alabama. LSU's super down.
I made that call on this show last year that Florida was going to be really good this year.
Didn't see it playing out exactly like this, no. I'm sure.
But Alabama also gets Kentucky. So it's Missouri, Kentucky,
wow,
Georgia, Tennessee.
Rich get richer. But yeah,
Joey Gatewood is the quarterback on this team by November 21st.
I hope so. Yes. And I hope that he scores 100 points.
That's the weirdest thing that has not been sorted out.
Well, there's a gentleman's agreement. Did you hear?
Yeah, right.
I think if that comes out to be true, people are going to be really mad.
At Kentucky? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere. I think people would be mad at Auburn, mad at Kentucky. Yeah, mad
I don't think anybody else will care. I don't think anybody else will care if that's actually true. It'll just be Kentucky fans. They're like, why would you make
if
this?
If he's our best quarterback, why did you? Yeah.
They just need to announce something with the basketball schedule that day as well.
Yeah. Hey, guess what?
And then it'll just blow over.
Here's Coach Cal holding the new puppy.
Are we sure he's their best quarterback, though?
That may be what it is.
No, but I think the frustration is that they never really get to find out.
Unless there's a gentleman's agreement.
It may not be a gentleman's agreement. It may be that they did see him in practice and they're like, yeah, we'll just redshirt him.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
But everybody's redshirting this year.
Yeah. All right, well, guys, that's all we got.
Are we going to put scores in the game?
Okay, yeah. Chief, what's the score of this game?
You know what? Let's see. I think we'll score 37 points.
And what will they score?
12.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
From your lips to God's
fun numbers.
Wait, what's the spread?
10.5.
You'll say 10.
Oh, that's a... I'll let them score 17. We'll say that.
It's 37-17?
Sure. That might change before we actually, you know, write an article.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one's going to actually end up being a low-scoring game simply because Kentucky's going to be running the ball so much. So it's not going to be a ton of possessions. So I'll say... Auburn 27, Kentucky 13. Will be a decent amount of field goal kicking here.
I got Auburn 34, Kentucky 24.
That's reasonable.
Well, 37-12 is what I hope it is. Just because a 12 yeah, is man. A sweet, it's a sweet score.
Yeah.
It's just field goals for us.
Four field goals.
That's all we have.
Oh, we're going to get a safety.
Oh, and, sweet.
Yeah.
I hope that you're like the lady, the chick from The Water Boy, and you're just like, it's like the safety happens, and all of a sudden I got a text from Chief just saying, I told you, it's what it's going to be. 37-12. I ain't a guess. It's what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. See y'all next week after all the wins 37-12.
Who knows?